12 million of us there are. A collective disease known as London. 8:37 a.m. Blackfriars Bridge. Half the world is trying to get across the bridge to work. I stop, lean against the parapet, look down into the River Thames.
Target has taken up a stationary mode on a parapet of Blackfriars Bridge, staring into the river. Booty car out.
Before the Romans came, this river was clean, pure, a goddess. Young warriors came naked to bathe in her, forever entered, forever virgin. Now, London excretes its filth into her. She's a rotten, drippy old whore.
Wish this lazy so-and-so would pull his finger out. 8:41. He's moving at last. Booty car out.
The human tide moves one way, into the city of London. I move the other, into Borough High Street. Know the borough? Iron railways, dirty brick viaducts, slums old when Dickens was a boy. Thrale Street, Bear Close, Doric Court, Almeda Street.
Concord's got himself into Almeda Street at last.
Number 54, Almeda Street. At the other end, of course. A very bijou squat by all accounts. The HQ of Socialist Attack magazine.
See today's headlines, Sturley?
Yes, I have.
Socialist Attack to publish intelligence files. Secret intelligence files detailing security service surveillance of extremist organizations in this country are due to be published.
I can read, Fortescue. No need to rub it in.
Yes, well, I'm off to see the chief in 5 minutes, Sturley. Those files were stolen from your section. Or deliberately leaked.
You don't have to see Almeda Street. You can smell it. Half the house is derelict, like rotten teeth. Slogans, kill all wogs, NF out, Chelsea boot boys rule. Check package. Plastic card for force-in lock. Plan of downstairs office. Description of file. And one very dirty war machine pistol, all collected from a locker at Blackfriars Station an hour ago.
He's entering the premises at last. 8:55 a.m. Booty car out.
The office. Two desks, filing cabinets, dust. These Wallies really think they're going to start a revolution. Now, second cabinet on right. Third drawer down. Fifth pocket. And here we are. Top secret file, DA1031/B. So easy. Too easy. They're paying top rates for this job. They wanted me armed. Let's take a gander.
I move over to the desk marked editor, rifle through the mess of papers, glance behind. Something dark stains the threadbare carpet, spreads rich and luscious across the dusty lino. Mr. Editor has written his last editorial. He lies behind his desk, steel-framed glasses awry, his chest a pulp of flesh. Now I know why the pistol I'd picked up at Blackfriars Station is so dirty. It isn't that the department can't afford to clean them no more. Someone set me up.
Our bird has flown. His feathers are trifle ruffled. Came out of number 54 like a rocket. The file under his arm. Booty car is operative. Activating next sequence. Out.
Good weekend in the country, Sir James.
Excellent. Thank you, Willie. Oh, makes me feel like a human being again. You must come out for a weekend sometime. Coffee?
No, thank you, sir.
You're still in that houseboat in Chelsea, aren't you?
That's right, Sir James.
Still playing the bohemian. I wish you wouldn't wear that sort of tie, Willie. Now, what can I do for you?
I was just wondering if the internal security report has arrived yet on the loss of that file from Sterley's section.
That's why I called the 11 o'clock meeting, so I don't want to hear your case in advance. Something does concern me, however.
Oh?
The new minister for our department.
Ah, a famous new brush.
A type whose father peddled around England during the 30s on his bicycle, who went to grammar school, ran an estate agent in Guildford, and therefore thinks he can run the world.
Ah, that type.
They're all over Whitehall these days with their busy, self-righteous little brooms.
The old school tie brigade have had it.
Willie, relaxed lifestyles and liberal attitudes are not in fashion anymore.
I can't recall them ever being in fashion with you, Sir James. I suppose the leaking of the file is a godsend to the new broom brigade.
Precisely. I find it profoundly irritating. Our minister's boss, as well we all know, is a woman. Ah, I can see his tiny estate agent's mind working. Women equal promotion, therefore women are a good thing. Hence he drafts into our midst a tough young lady from the Treasury, all lacquered hair, pretty smiles and blood-red fingernails.
The alluring Miss Taylor.
Don't be deceived. The bitch is ruthless. A double first at Oxford. She has conducted the inquiry. She has written the report. I haven't had a look in.
I'd like to welcome you to this press conference, called rather rapidly and in tragic circumstances. Now, as you can probably understand, all us comrades here at Socialist Attack have been deeply shocked by this cold-blooded reactionary butchery. Jack Ames was my fellow editor of Socialist Attack. Now, he was shot in cold blood while preparing for publication a file of the British government's internal security department, a file which would, for the first time, have revealed all the repressive and anti-democratic techniques being used against the progressive and socialist forces in this country. Now, we at Socialist Attack mourn the murder of a brave comrade.
What's your name, sir?
Chris Wyndham. Now, you didn't let me finish.
Where was the body found, Mr. Wyndham?
In this room.
Did you see it?
No, it was removed before I arrived.
Anyone tell you what sort of state it was in?
An ambulance man told me he'd never seen bullets make such a mess of a body.
Have you any comments to make on the police report that the weapon used was a Ward machine pistol, a weapon normally issued only to the members of the government security forces?
No, that's very interesting.
Do you think the killing would have been undertaken by government security forces?
Nothing would surprise me about the reactionary forces at work today in this country.
What's this fellow's name?
And he said, quote, "We are still determined to publish the file, but at a later date." End quote. End story. I'll get down to Scotland Yard, see what they've got to say. Bye. Sorry to keep you.
No trouble.
Funny business.
Indeed. Hello. Yes, the press conference went perfectly. They swallowed the story on the Ward machine pistol. The press boys at New Scotland Yard will be denying a story that turns out to be true. That should add to the fun and games. Ah, and another thing. The brave comrades of Socialist Attack took copies of the file. That should keep the pot bubbling along nicely. Boudicar out.
South London, where grime grows faster than crime and truck gears grind all through the night. I live in a flat beside a betting shop, in a street of shops, furniture shops, newsagents, the Duke of Clarence boozer, a gentleman's hair stylist, and the traditional caff, with a Pepsi sign outside and grease with everything inside.
Of course, Terry, I had to put the fruit machine in everywhere, Doctor. Customers like it, use it all the time, I make money from it. And Nick Ioannidis, he like it.
Well, if Nick likes it, you've got to put it in. Great bacon, this, Georgia.
You like it? Only best offcuts for you. Now, so Nick said to me, you have no fruit machine at Teddy's place that puts you out of business. So his boys come round, put it in. But I no like it. Look there, all them kids using it. They should be at school.
Well, keeps them from doing worse.
Not my young Stefan. You know, Terry, a good boy used to stay in evenings, work for his exams, so one day he got a good job. Show respect for his parents, but... Ah, since this come in... Stop, I say. Pico, listen to me. Gets friends with kids playing it. Now he up West End all day, all night in them amusement arcades.
That's sad, Giorgio.
Funny, eh? We stay in Greece in my village. We poor, but family together. We come here to city, we rich, but no family no more.
How much, Giorgio, for the meal?
Eggs, bacon, chips, tomatoes, bread and butter, tutties, 135.
Yeah. Anyone been asking for me?
What do you mean?
Asking questions, you know, poking around.
Nicolanides in here collecting his money off the machine. He mentioned you, that's all.
Oh. Well, I ain't got no fruit machines, so I don't think Nick's going to be giving me no bother.
Why you ask?
Ah, no reason.
The old bill after you?
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
I watch out for you, Terry.
Inspiring place, South London. Everyone braced against the cold, scrunched into their anoraks. Sleep in their eyes, snot in their noses, dandruff on their shoulders. No place like it. Nothing unusual about, except a passer bloke with a tattoo on his nose. Here we are. Home sweet betting shop next door. The usual no-hopers sliding in and out. Just as I get through the door, it hits me. It is big, stinks of garlic, and has a mouthful of gold teeth. Nick Ioannidis. Dazed, sprawl on the floor, I watch his hand move to his holster. Outside, in the street, an old lady stops, stares disgusted at someone drunk so early in the morning, passes on. I stare down the barrel of his gun. A Ward machine pistol. His fat finger tightens. His face goes beetroot. Nothing happens. I even have time to fit my silencer before I shoot him. In the arm. I kick the door shut. Someone, someplace, don't like me. But who?
It is now 11 o'clock, so I am calling this meeting to order. First item on the agenda is the report on internal security within this department.
Sir James, with respect...
Now, are the anti-surveillance devices operating?
Operative, Sir James.
What takes place at this meeting is top secret. No one will talk to anyone about what is discussed or decided here. Understood. I don't want to read my exact words in the Times tomorrow. Miss Taylor... Will you please read a summary of your report without too much jargon?
Certainly, Sir James. I was appointed 11-284 to conduct an inquiry concerning the reported loss of file DA-1031-B from Section 4 of this department. The director of Section 4 is Mr. Sturley. In routine checks, it had been noted as present on 2-284, but its loss was discovered on the following check on 5-284. Mr. Sturley later stated under examination that the time lapse between the discovery of its disappearance and his official notification of this fact to his superiors was caused by attempts by him to locate the file.
That's right.
File DA-1031-B held a security classification 2. This means it was kept within a restricted area, the key to which only Mr. Sturley possesses. The key is normally kept within his safe to be signed for. The department's internal security expert advised me that the file's removal could not have been affected by persons exterior to the building.
An inside job.
But that there are several persons working in this building, in other sections, professionally competent to undertake the theft outside office hours.
Breaking and entering is our trade, after all.
Could you stop interrupting, Mr. Sturley?
However, on one sensitive matter, the report was able to reach a definitive conclusion, namely the precise contents of file DA-1031-B. Under normal circumstances, the file would contain only weekly surveillance reports on the activities of left-wing publications and journalists, their sources and phone calls. Considering to whom it was leaked, this information was damaging enough. However, under repeated questioning, Mr. Sturley did admit that his file included a copy of a secret memo written by himself. It summarized the arguments within the department in the last few years over whether increased action should be taken against left-wing targets.
Oh, God!
identified the people engaged in the debate.
Oh, all our dirty linen washed in public.
And ended listing Mr. Sturley's own recommendations, not only for increased surveillance of these targets, but for their increased physical and psychological harassment by the department.
It's a disaster.
Should have been doing it years ago.
That concludes my report.
Congratulations, Sturley. The British public will believe that all your provincial right-wing fantasies are now official government policy.
And not before time, too.
Your clever little preemptive leak, leaving the government no alternative.
I did not leak that file, Fortescue. That's your sort of...
Can we stop this unseemly wrangling, please, gentlemen? Now, Mr. Fortescue will bring us fully up to date on the situation, since I believe there have been serious developments in the last 2 hours.
Indeed, Sir James. Well, socialist attack, having triumphantly seized all our most embarrassing and infantile plans, announced they are to publish them. Last night, while our comrade editor burns the midnight oil preparing for publication, someone slips in and neatly butchers him. The situation's no longer embarrassing, it's explosive.
They did it themselves.
What, Mr. Sturley?
One of them did it, for the publicity.
Are you seriously suggesting that this editor had himself shot in the cause of world revolution?
No, Sir James. But it could have been someone else in their group. It's well-known Marxist doctrine that the end justifies the means, that the publicity caused by this killing could virtually destroy our department.
The leak has already succeeded in doing that. There is one more point, Sir James.
Yes?
Just before I came into the meeting, I was phoned by my opposite number at New Scotland Yard. There is an extremely ugly rumour circulating among the press that the editor was shot by a Ward machine pistol, a weapon owned exclusively by our department.
What? Who spread that rumour?
The Deputy Commissioner didn't know.
Those bastards at Socialist Attack, I'll bet. I warn you, they want to destroy us.
Does Scotland Yard actually know yet what weapon was used?
Not definitely, but I'm afraid preliminary investigations tend to back up press speculation.
Someone in this department's out to destroy me.
Stop whining, man. Now I am on the verge of retirement. I find it infinitely depressing to watch my organisation descending into this pit of self-promotion, self-justification. It is disgusting. It is unpatriotic. However, I am still in charge. I shall act. Miss Taylor.
Yes, Sir James.
You would appear to be this department's main channel of communication with the minister these days.
You have complete access to him at all times.
Nevertheless, you have his ear. What is his reaction to all this?
Naturally, Sir James, he is very upset. He wants to see you immediately this meeting is over. He has to face the House of Commons at 3 o'clock.
Well, the demands for a public inquiry will be overwhelming.
Yes.
Then I shall have to preempt them. Enough damage has been done already. Having met the minister, I will appoint an individual with full powers to investigate this matter exhaustively. Prepare for the spilling of much blood and the rolling of many heads, gentlemen and ladies.
Nick, I honour days.
Terry, be gentle with my arm. It needs dressing.
Let it bleed, you evil Greek swine.
I need bandage soon, or I lose blood.
Why were you trying to knock me off, eh?
We used to be in the regiment together, Terry?
Yeah, Nick.
I was just obeying order, Terry.
Whose?
You know the rules, Terry?
Well, I'm breaking them, just like you tried to do.
Who ordered you? My arm... Let go of it.
Who was it?
No. Usual way. Telephone call. Just the voice. Tell me to pick up instructions. Shoot her in the locker they tell me to go to.
A Blackfriars station, I bet.
Kill me! Blackfriars station. They're nothing personal in this, Teddy. Just a job, huh?
Sorry, Nick, but I am taking it personal. Very personal. Why didn't your shooter go off? Not like you, not to check.
No time. What do you want me to do, take pot shots at commuters on Blackfriars Bridge? Me, I like old-fashioned revolver, none of this modern machine rubbish.
Save by progress. What firm you usually work for, Nick?
No, ask me these questions, Terry, please.
We both know, Nick, through painful experience, that my shooter is in perfect working order. At the moment, silencer fitted, it is pointed right at your left knee. You want to spend the rest of your life walking around in circles?
Spencer's firm. Work out of Clapham. Cover all of West London, south of the river.
Who's your boss?
Spencer.
Who tells him what to do?
I don't know his name, Terry. Why not ask your brother? He knows these things.
I might have to do that yet, Nick.
He in the same line of business.
Two-bit villains running fruit machines don't get involved in heavy stuff.
What you want, Terry?
Answers. And once I've found the answers...
I don't know no answers, Terry. Teddy!
Saved by the bell. Who's that then?
Look out the front window.
You stay just where you are, you Greek filth.
I'm not moving, Teddy.
God, the 7th Cavalry.
Who is it?
Stay just there. I'll just collect a few things, like your wallet, and be on my way.
Where are you going?
Out the back window. You're lucky, Nick. Next time, I'll shoot straight.
Where'd he go?
He jumped me, boss.
You dozy prat. Where'd he go?
Up the alley, toward the market.
Come on, girl, you've got a bargain here. Normally you buy an ordinary bath towel for 4 nigger, right? But here I'm offering you £6 the pair. You can have the pair in blue or one colour each. There's green, there's blue, and there's brown and blue.
Hello, Jerry.
Sid.
What's the matter?
Old Bill, 2 of them.
100 a barrel, son. I'll keep them off.
One thing I do offer is value. And it's cheap enough if you just want to wash your dog or pussy. Now, passing on to my next special offer, a famous and exotic continental perfume, Toujours L'Amour. Sold under its proper name in France and Germany, but sold here under a different name, Ray Fleeker. Yes, Ray Fleeker. Oh, I see 2 gentlemen over there look like they might be interested. Buy it for your ladies, sir, but if you're over 35, I recommend you dilute it before use, or you could end up in the intensive care units. Oh, I see you 2 gents aren't interested. Well, come on, girls. This particular batch of Ray Fleeker is so cheap because it was banned for Argentina, but it got held up by the war.
They've gone, Terry.
Cheers, Sid.
Only a quid a bottle.
Just because I've appointed you to be in charge of the investigation, Willie, it doesn't mean I've stopped watching you.
Of course, James. I wouldn't have expected otherwise. How did the session with the minister go?
I fear the new broom is being swept along by forces outside his control. He was jumpy, Willie, decidedly jumpy. He had just endured a roasting in full cabinet. I could still see the burn marks.
He obviously took on your idea for an internal investigation.
Like a net to a drowning man. Estate agents from Guildford aren't renowned for valour.
This is one of the more intriguing aspects of the case.
What?
The minister and Sturdy, they have so much in common.
Speculation, Willie, speculation.
No, just objectively, I mean. Provincial grammar school boys with chips on their shoulders.
Willie, I chose you for this job because you're diplomatic.
My father was ambassador in Buenos Aires, Sir James. I drank diplomacy at my mother's breast.
We want a preliminary report in 3 days. A full one by the weekend.
What is the investigation to cover?
The leak. Who, when, and why. And the murder.
There'll have to be an inquest.
That can always be delayed for technical reasons. It's imperative we first find out who's behind all this villainy.
I wonder who did spread that rumor about the machine pistol. They obviously knew it was true.
I was brought up on Kipling, Willie. The jungle stories.
Oh, the great game.
The best training for the jungles of Whitehall I could have had. A tiger is stalking the corridors of power. Be very careful, Willie. I look out of my Whitehall window sometimes over the quiet Thames to the other side. I see all the tumult and violence, the riots and muggings. On this side we have soft carpets, civilized talk.
And the finest brandy.
We have power. But it is very fragile.
Ever spent an afternoon on the London Tube, shaking off your tail, going round and round the inner circle, switching from the Piccadilly to the Bakerloo line and back again, all the time jumping, looking over your shoulder while the steel rails shriek, the neon needles and the grime infests? I walk along the embankment to a soup kitchen for down and outs. One light shines out from the offices of Whitehall. I am alone in a hostile city. Come on, Terry, think. That's what they taught you in the regiment. Think on your feet or die on them. They have one coin in their currency of power. A file of papers. Tomorrow, I go to my brother, see if his contacts can trade it. And if he can, then I find out who, and then... vengeance.
Sweet Thames, run softly till I end my song. Sweet Thames, run softly, for I speak not loud,
nor long. Once I was a young man, lithe in limb, quick of mind. I was cox for my college's rowing eight at Oxford. Our young bodies rowed on this very same Thames. Nine of us. Each year we had a formal dinner. We all dressed immaculately, met for sherry in one of our rooms before dining. Nine of us. Some sat in chairs, others leant on the mantelpiece, or chatted quietly in small groups. There was no tension. We were comfortable, assured, basking in the good opinion each had of the other. No one tried to impress the other with his wit, his knowledge, his intelligence, though we had them. And for why? Because each knew precisely the other's worth. An earl's son, a famous industrious nephew, an Indian prince, a bishop's son. I am the last. I hear the rats in the woodwork. The middle classes with their spaniel grins and tedious opinions and vaulting ambition. They're heathens, pagans, barbarians. And they are within the walls.
That was part one of Deep Six by John Fletcher. The cast was as follows. Terry was played by Freddie Leese. Sir James Simpson, Conrad Phillips. Fortescue, Hubert Rees. Chris, Elwin Johnson. Linda Taylor, Madeline Kem. Sterley, John Lindstrom. Nick, Brett Usher. Thompson, John Abineri. Watson, Ray Handy. And the street trader, Colin Starkey. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.